Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Thursday night. I am flying solo here at the Hacienda. Natalie's off. We've got a jam-packed show for you today. We've got a little sick baby girl who kept us up all night. Poor thing, had a little fever, so my wife is she's not feeling well either, so she's two sick people. She's sick. She's watching a baby who's sick. So you've got me. You've got David. You've got Philip on tonight's show. But it is a testosterone Thursday, actually. So it is testosterone Thursday. We've got a ton of news to get to on Redacted tonight. And we're going to start with China. We're going to look at the very latest, because over the past 24, 48 hours, we had the United States beating the drum once again for going to war in China. You have Taiwan, the president of Taiwan, calling and saying, hey, China's about to invade us. China is flying a number of warplanes overhead, and a number of media headlines are all focused on China. So what in the world is going on? The United States trying to provoke this? Because China certainly doesn't want this war. We will get to the bottom of that. We're going to be joined by Colonel Douglas McGregor in just a few moments. I'm very excited about that. Also on the show, we're going to look at the number of excess deaths. We've got new data out today, and it is troubling, startling. In fact, when we look at this data, not only in the United States, but across the pond in the UK, what other countries are reporting this data, whether it's Australia, New Zealand, troubling stuff. And why is no one investigating this? Why, when you go to the BBC's website or you go to CNN.com or any of the other major media publications, they will ignore this? They're not talking about it. I mean, this is unbelievable cover-up of whatever's happening. We need an investigation of this. And, you know, maybe it's not as a straight line as we think it is. Great. Let's investigate it. Let's find out why is no one talking about it. So we will dive deep into that story on the show tonight. We're also going to look at new partnerships from the White House and big data companies, which are actively going to police social media to the tune of 200,000 different websites to see what you are up to. Boy, they waited to make this announcement right until after the midterm elections, and they didn't even really make the announcement. They clandestinely made this partnership. And we're going to break that down on the show tonight. Really troubling as well. And also, I can't believe I'm even going to say this, but look at your screen. See this right here coming up on the show? I'm not making that up. That's actually being talked about at this hour. John Fetterman for president? Hand to the heavens.
Oh, my gosh.
Hand to the heavens. You can't make this up. I'm not making this up. Yes.
Did you ever see Joe Rogan's stand-up comedy where he was like, when he was talking about how Bush got in office or whatever, and he's like, I think we can go dumber. And it's almost as if we've gone, you know, like we have somebody that has half a brain in there right now, and now we're getting ready to,
I think it's part of the plan. I mean, let me know in the chat. You raise your hand now. We're going to talk about it coming up a little bit later in the show. But let us know in the chat right now. Do you think that this is all part of the plan? Like they literally want meat puppets in there. They don't want actual humans with a brain. They want meat puppets so they can control them. That's my opinion. Tell me if I'm wrong. It is Thursday. It's time to get uncomfortable. And that means Redacted starts right now. Chatter saying, is that Fetterman thing a joke? No, I wish it was. But this is the clown world we live in, guys. It's not a joke. This is what's being floated right now by Democrats. This is what's being floated by mainstream media. They're so excited about what happened in Pennsylvania. The joke of, you know, the American elections right now. I mean, you know, this is the clown world.
Well,
we
and it's
live
funny because they're like, one of their main talking points is like, he's just a cool guy. He's just wearing a hoodie, you know, and it's like he's famous for wearing his hoodie.
Yeah. And he's so gallant, you know, he's so brave for getting up there after a stroke. He shows us all how to come back from victory, from that type of adversity and rise above it. Right.
Think about it. Well, and think about it, like how they're going to have to spin it from the press secretary. Like, no, he didn't mean what he said this time. I know it sounded like it was jarbled and backwards, but what he really meant was,
my God, it's already awful. Please save us from this. Please, please, please. Hey, we've got a daily newsletter. It's totally free. I want you to all to subscribe. We had a lot of fun publishing the newsletter this morning. A lot of really interesting stories in there. Again, it's totally free. If you go to redacted.inc, just put your name in there, put your email in there, and you can join the rebellion. Join all of the rebels here on Redacted. Again, it's redacted.inc, not .com. Click on the little link there and to confirm your email address. So when you put in your email, you'll receive a welcome email. You just need to confirm it so it doesn't go to your spam folder. And then tomorrow morning, you'll receive the newsletter first thing in the morning, delivered to your inbox. We kind of always start out with a little fun story at the top, and then we kind of cover the markets. You'll see we scroll down here with some things you might have missed overnight, and then we talk about the markets, what's happening, the gold, silver, Bitcoin, Dow, markets, NASDAQ, etc. And then we get into your top story, and we cover about four or five big stories. You can read it over your cup of coffee, and you'll be more informed to start your day. So Natalie does a heck of a lot of writing on this. I do some editing and add some comedy here and there and format everything, and our team works really hard to provide this newsletter for you. So again, please go to redacted.inc, click on that and put in your email address, and you'll receive it tomorrow morning, first thing in the morning. Well, now to what's unfolding in China and Taiwan. Chinese warplane activity over Taiwan hits a three-month high. The president of Taiwan says a Chinese invasion of the island is about to happen. Even for the Obama administration officials, former Obama administration officials coming out and saying that we need to get ready for an invasion, that this is about to happen. So what is the truth here? And it's all very convenient, the timing of this, given the midterm elections in the United States just after the midterm elections. Joining us now is Colonel Douglas McGregor, and we wanted to get your assessment on this. Colonel, great to have you back on the show.
Fine. Happy to be here.
So let's talk about your assessment of this. I mean, we've been talking that the real story, of course, is China and what happens with Taiwan. We've been talking about that all summer. And are we at an inflection moment right now where this could get even hotter than we thought possible in this calendar year?
The quick answer is no. And I spent a lot of time looking at it over the last 24 hours. And I don't know what makes the current set of conditions any more imminent than they were 6 months ago or even 6 years ago. When I look at it from a purely military standpoint, the upgrades, if you want to call them that, in terms of modernization applied to airfields and missile forces, those are real, but those upgrades are not spectacular. They're simply designed to make the airfields more defensible, to place more aircraft in the vicinity if required. They're retiring a lot of old aircraft and rolling in new variants on fighters and fighter bombers. Those things are happening. Of course, their missile force is overwhelmingly theater and tactical ballistic missiles as opposed to intercontinental ballistic missiles, because the threat they see is really from the sea and largely from the U.S. Navy. But I don't see a concentration of force that would indicate anything happening quickly. That would take us a long time to assemble, frankly. The forces are not sitting around waiting to invade. They're still spread out to a number of different areas. So, no, I don't see anything imminent, and I'm not sure what they're referring to or what they see, because I don't see it.
So specifically, and you're talking about the Chinese mounting forces. Yes, the Chinese mounting.
Mainland China.
Yeah.
So it's
strange to me then, right? I mean, this is why I wanted to have you on, because the president of Taiwan says this is imminent. You have former Obama administration officials coming out saying this is imminent. Of course, you saw David Petraeus, of course, being trucked out over the past couple of weeks as well on this. So why now? I mean, I know you're not a politician, but what's your sense of, like, why are we hearing all of this rhetoric right now?
Well, I might also add that I recently listened to John Bolton come out and describe China as the great existential threat of our era. And I wasn't present for his statement, but if I had been there, I would have said, well, what happened to the global caliphate?
Right.
I thought the global caliphate was the existential threat of our era. What did it go away? I think a lot of this is grossly exaggerated. The president of Taiwan is in trouble politically. There are two parties that are meaningful and powerful that govern Taiwan from time to time. One is the KMT. And the other is the Democratic Progressive Party, which is led by the current president. The DPP, which is the current party in power, has always been very pro-Japanese. people need to understand that Taiwan was ruled by Japan for quite a while. The people on Taiwan, however, thrived under the Japanese. And the Japanese have worked very hard to help industrialize and modernize industry on Taiwan, just as they did in South Korea. We never bring these kinds of things up, but Japan's presence everywhere was not, quote unquote, inherently evil from the standpoint of the people that lived there and lived under Japanese rule. And that was particularly true for Taiwan. So that's one party. And that's the party that has talked for years, decades, about independence from China. However, whenever they have walked up to the abyss, in other words, to look just to the cliff edge of independence, they realized that that was a red line that could not be crossed, because if you cross that red line, you will end up at war with mainland China. That's been made very clear repeatedly. We've always understood that, which is why we adopted the one China policy that we did, not because we wanted to harm Taiwan. On the contrary, we were trying to protect it, make it abundantly clear that we were not going to make Taiwan a threat to the mainland. So that's red line number one. That hasn't changed, but Xi is in political trouble. You have to understand that whenever there are major elections in that country, one party wins by a point or two over the other. So the KMT, which is Chiang Kai-shek's old party, is breathing down her neck. And the KMT, Clayton, wants unification with the mainland. That's what we don't understand. So you're talking about 50% of the electorate on Taiwan has sided with the DPP and this eventual independence. And the other 50% says, oh, no, we want reunification with the mainland. Well, people find that hard to understand. Well, things have changed on the mainland. You have instead of two radically different systems, actually speaking, they've moved closer to each other because the Taiwanese system has always been very authoritarian. Today, the mainland Chinese system is authoritarian, but it is no longer totalitarian as it was under Mao. This is not Maoist China. There are no real communists left in China. They're capitalists, but they're state capitalists. That's what we normally associate with hard fascism. Both of those states, the people that live in those states, the rulers of those states, have a very similar goal. That goal is to eventually become like Singapore. Now, this is hard for Americans to understand, but Singapore is what the Chinese in Taiwan and the Chinese on the mainland both want. Now, right. Why do they want to live in Singapore? Well, Singapore is this thriving financial center, economic metropolis. There's absolute enforcement of the rule of law to the point where most of us would find it stifling and insufferable, but that's completely consistent with Confucian culture and the Chinese mentality. They don't care who governs as long as the government provides for security and enables everyone who lives in that country to earn a good living, to enjoy prosperity, and improve themselves. It's a very different world from the one that you and I live in. They both want that. You have a million Taiwanese citizens every day working and living on the mainland. Every time there is a major crisis internationally of any kind over the last 30 years, the banks in Taiwan have moved most of their capital to the mainland, where they think it's going to be safer. The bottom line, Clayton, is there is not going to be a war between China and Taiwan unless two red lines are crossed. One, Declaration of Independence. Unambiguous from the government of Taiwan. We are now independent. We do not recognize the mainland as part of the governing legitimate authority here or anywhere else for China. We are it. Number two, we are now going to station U.S. forces or Japanese forces or both on Taiwan. That's red line number two. If either of those things happen, no question about it, China will mobilize. Millions of troops will show up, ships will show up, there will be war, even if it results in the destruction of Taiwan. And that's because all through World War II, stretching all the way back into the 30s to 1934, 35, 36, 37, every military intervention, incursion, and ultimately invasion by the Imperial Japan of China was staged on Taiwan. Taiwan was Japan's unsinkable aircraft carrier. Now, when we sell weapons to Taiwan, we used to be very careful about what we sold to ensure that they were, quote unquote, for purely defensive purposes. But recently, some of our decisions about missiles and missile technology and radars have raised eyebrows in Beijing, because they look at the arrival of weapon systems and say, oh, those aren't really defensive. Those are being pre-positioned for use by U.S. forces so that U.S. forces could come into Taiwan and man these in a conflict or crisis. Now, I don't think that's really the case yet, but that alerts people to the mentality in Beijing and what they fear. And what they fear is us, U.S. military, on Taiwan in any capacity more than anything else.
So that's red line number two. Does that seem, I mean, it seems like from the Biden administration, we heard Anthony Blinken just a few weeks ago saying that China wants to seize Taiwan on a faster timeline. So you're hearing this rhetoric from the Biden administration. You're hearing it from Republicans as well as Democrats. And you were right. You were totally prescient the other day before this election saying, Clayton, I don't see after this election much change at all. And in fact, you were right about that. Now we've got total gridlock in Washington, and both parties are in simpatico on this China question. So do you think that the United States would dare to cross that red line? Does that seem like something you're starting to hear or see? If that's the only way that they're going to go to war, then that would be the way that they're moving, it seems like. You hear Antony Blinken talk about this and these other guys in the Washington in the Biden administration pushing for that.
Well, the first answer that springs to mind is no. I don't see that we are planning to do that. Now, if we are, I'm unaware of it. Would we do that? As I said, I think that would be extremely foolhardy and unnecessary. I don't think that this administration, whatever we think of it, and I don't hold it in very high esteem, is that stupid. So I don't see us doing that. What we do see are a couple of things. First of all, you talked about the aircraft, the Chinese aircraft. If you look at the Air Defense Identification Zone, what we call the ADIZ, that reaches out and touches Taiwan. In other words, if you're sitting in China, you have this thing called the Air Defense Identification Zone, which requires everyone who flies into it to identify themselves. It doesn't say you have to land. It doesn't say you can't come in. It's just if you fly in, you must identify yourself. That zone skirts or incorporates some of Taiwan. It's part of their early warning system. We have an air defense identification zone that extends 1,000 miles into the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
That extends right up to the border with Russia, practically, in the Bering Strait around Alaska. We all the nations have these things, and the great powers are extremely sensitive to them. If someone flies in from Chinese or Russian air forces, violates that ADIZ and doesn't announce themselves and make it clear that this is not hostile, we scramble aircraft, send them into the air. They do the same thing. And whenever we send ships through the Taiwan Strait, which we just did, the Chinese shake their heads and like, oh, stupid, send up 150 jets and make it clear that this is not what we want. And by the way, we usually get a message from the Taiwanese Ministry of Defense that says, would you mind not doing that anymore? Because every time you do that, the Chinese on the mainland send up aircraft and raise hell with us. Now, last point on this, it's very important. We just had this party Congress. Right. Everyone is talking about Xi. Oh, he's now more powerful than Mao was, and so forth and so on. Clayton, that's not an accident. The Chinese ruling elite, which is really what the Communist Party is now, it's just a party elite that rules the country. Stop thinking of them as communists and just thinking of them as a standard fascist elite party. They're afraid. They are afraid of economic disaster inside of China. We could sit here and run through all the bubbles that are bursting in China. The first one, of course, is the real estate bubble, which I'm sure you've heard about and others have.
Yeah, we've covered it on the show. It's potentially a disaster, right?
The Chinese fear that they will wake up and discover that in addition to lots of cities with no one living in them, that there will be tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of people who can't find work, who have no employment. They know from history there are two things that get you into trouble in China in terms of what we call dynastic change events, when the government is overthrown and a new one walks in. One is starvation. If you can't feed the population, you're done. Every emperor who failed to feed the population, who had a problem with plagues or starvation, was done right away. If you can't employ people, if the economy seizes up and stops and China is no longer the big agrarian power that it once was. It's got a very small agricultural sector compared with what it formerly had, because it has many, many more people and very, very little arable land. You can't do that. And the third thing, you cannot lose conflicts against foreigners. And remember, the Chinese routinely remind everyone of their 100 years, their century of humiliation, when China was literally invaded by all the great powers, Japan, Britain, the United States, France, everybody moved in. The whole South China Sea was owned and operated by the Royal Navy. You couldn't move in or leave a port in China without running into the Royal Navy. They don't want that anymore. They want to be able to know that they can move down through the South China Sea into the Strait of Malacca and go off and get oil, deliver goods, acquire food, all these kinds of things. So they're very sensitive to that right now. They're not sure that they are performing to expectation. They're afraid of an economic implosion. So what do? You give the emperor absolute authority. And that's the way you need to think about Xi. Xi is the emperor. And by the way, that's what the Chinese people want. They want an emperor to ensure disaster does not strike. But third on that list is the foreign power that might come in and dictate terms to China. And for them, that's us. Because everything we build is designed to penetrate their anti-access capabilities. Remember, we talk about denial access capabilities that keep us out. Well, that's the whole point of all the theater ballistic missiles and cruise missiles. A third of what we call their Navy is really a giant Coast Guard that is equipped with lots of missiles. What are they there for? Us. We are seen as the enemy that is threatening them. So we look at China and we say, well, this is some growing, burgeoning threat. But the threat is not to us as a power per se, but to our ability to influence them with military power inside their country. And of course, economically, the sanctions that we impose and so forth. So I think we've gone overboard. And remember this, the date of 2049 has been the date for many years now of projected reunification. At this party Congress, they once again reaffirmed 2049. Now, 2049 does not mean that if we're not reunified, we go to war. It's simply their preferred target date because they always talk about peaceful reunification. They did it again at the party Congress. There is no desire for a war right now in China. And the Chinese know one thing that's very important. If they woke up tomorrow morning and Xi said, march, send the legions, and we conquer Taiwan, first of all, they'd have to destroy a lot of it, which would have a terrible impact on the global commercial community, the economy, and so forth. But they would lose everyone's support and respect in Asia. Everyone would be absolutely appalled by an attack on Taiwan. They know that. Xi was just in Vietnam, just had a meeting there with the leadership of Vietnam. And what did he want to know from them? He wanted to know that they would not join an anti-Chinese alliance. And that's what he was concerned about. Vietnamese said, no, we're not going to ally with the United States. Absolutely right. Out of the question. And where else did Xi go? He flew to Saudi Arabia because the Saudis are about to demolish the petrodollar. Now, he didn't cause that. We caused that.
Right.
Our problem with the economy and the petrodollar have all been created in Washington, D.C. But he's flying in there because it looks like between Saudi Arabia and China, there will be a new modus vivendi that will probably spell the end of the petrodollar. So I guess on the basis of that, we want to make war on China. I don't know. But the issues that confront us, the things that divide us, are not military, and they don't require military action. They're largely economic and financial, and a lot of them have to do with us. So everybody talks about fentanyl coming from China. Well, sure, it goes into Mexico. Some of it is offloaded in San Diego and San Francisco and shipped south into Mexico for further refinement packaging so that it can be sold back in the United States. Our problems with fentanyl are our problems.
Right.
You don't want fentanyl? Close the border. Don't make war on China.
Right.
It's a waste of time.
Because the U.S. dollar, and this is the focus, and I believe we'll see what this administration does and where we go in the next few years to try to maintain U.S. dollar dominance and U.S. hegemony in that regard economically. So I hope you're right. I absolutely hope you're right that the United States is not that stupid. Maybe they'll try to move on, try to sap them in some sort of a Cold War mentality instead of actual boots on the ground. And that could just be equally as bad. I want to get your take on Russia before we get you out of here. And of course, overnight, we saw the Russian Ministry of Defense make moves to remove Russian forces from the city of Kherson. And we predicted last night on the show that immediately there was going to be Western jubilation, that this was a Russian retreat. And sure enough, they didn't disappoint almost immediately. President Biden said that Vladimir Putin is pulling troops out of Fallujah, which, of course, is not in Ukraine. But nevertheless, he meant Kherson. And so there was this jubilation among the mainstream media about removal from Kherson. This is a clear sign, of course, that Russia is now losing. And I just want to get your sense of what this means, what this portends for ground freezing over the next few weeks. What is Russia doing here by this move?
When General Surovikin took command, he is the new theater commander. In other words, the equivalent of, say, Schwarzkopf or Tommy Franks in CENTCOM. He is now the Western theater commander for everything that happens in and around Ukraine. And when he took command, there were certain agreements that were made and new decisions from President Putin. Number one, we are going to prepare for a decisive operation to end the war. In other words, no more simply defend southern Ukraine and the territory that we've annexed. No more expectation of serious negotiations with anybody. Those are over. We have to now end the war. How do you end the war? Well, you launch offensive operations that are so devastating in their power and destructiveness that the enemy cannot resist them. However, if you're going to do that, you have to scale back current activities. In other words, you've got to make some changes on the ground, shuffle troops, change resource commitments, because you are now building up forces that are not in southern Ukraine, except for some are there, but most are not, that are being prepared with this mobilization force of 300,000 integrated into this new force for these future offensive operations, which I've talked about before, which others have mentioned, which will come this winter once the ground freezes. Now, it hasn't gone below 37 degrees at night in Ukraine, and it's got to drop below freezing significantly and stay there for the ground to freeze. So it's not going to happen until that is done. Now, in Kherson, they had about 25,000 troops sitting in Kherson City. The Ukrainians were trying to assemble 40,000 to 60,000 to attack it. And there was a debate. Well, can we defend it? Yeah, we can probably defend it, but is it worth it? And what are we going to do about the Russians that live in Kherson? Remember, we're operating in an area where the people that live in that part of Ukraine are Russians.
Right.
So they said, no, that's going to be very difficult. So they said, no, let's withdraw the civilians. And so for the last several weeks, you've seen the movement of civilians in Kherson out.
Right. I think it was like 115,000 civilians out of Kherson over the past 3 weeks.
I don't know, but virtually the whole population has left. And some of the people being interviewed on the way out said that, yes, the shelling from the Ukrainian side was becoming increasingly severe and intense. So yeah, we probably should leave. The 25,000 troops that were there were well prepared to defend it, but they said, no, let's not do that. Let's pull them across and redistribute those assets elsewhere. A lot of these soldiers that are in southern Ukraine, about 70,000 to 80,000 of them, have been fighting for several months. There is an interest in giving them some rest and refitting them for the future offensive. So pulling these 25,000 troops made operational sense. Now, strategically, Putin's not concerned about what we in the West think, but I think he is concerned about what's happening in Russia. And the average Russian on the street is extremely upset. He takes the position that this is Russia, Russian territory. We should be moving forward. We need to liberate Odessa. We need to liberate Kharkov. These are Russian cities. That's what we need to do. Why are we falling back? And they've tried to explain that this is not a sudden decision. This was carefully considered. The priority right now is to consolidate control over what we have. Let's not take any unnecessary casualties. And if the enemy goes into Kherson in great numbers, guess what? The entire place is carefully targeted for annihilation. In fact, the Southern Ukrainian Command made an announcement that they were concerned that perhaps this was a trap, that if they go in great numbers into Kherson, that the Russians will in fact concentrate their striking power, rockets, missiles, artillery, in great quantity and kill everything that goes into Kherson because there are no Russians living there now. So the Ukrainians aren't stupid. They're actually on to something. They understand that this could be very dangerous for them to move in there in great numbers. So I think eventually the Russian population will calm down, but right now they're angry. They're angry with Putin. They're angry with Sorovikin. They're angry with the Russian military. They don't understand why anything is being given up. But remember, they made a similar decision with Kharkov. They said, it's not worth holding. Pull out. Pull back to the river. And that's what they've done. It hasn't hurt them militarily. And in fact, they were able to inflict a lot of damage on the Ukrainians who subsequently poured in there. So I think if we see the Ukrainians go in any strength into Kherson, we will watch as they are annihilated. And they can do it now because there aren't any civilians in the way. So I would regard this as an operational decision with short-term benefit in support of the long-term strategy of building this enormous offensive striking power. I also think that's why the administration has now privately approached the Russians to talk to them. Because I think people in Washington, as well as in London, because those are the two hubs for all the intelligence with CIA and MI6, they know what's coming. And there are roughly 250 to 300,000 combat troops, plus another 200,000 or 300,000 in support in Belarusia, in Western Russia, on the western side of Ukraine, and building up south of the lines in southern Ukraine. So you have what looks like the potential for three operational axes. Now, how this will all come together and when it will happen, we think it depends on the weather, but they're pretty close to being ready. So that once the ground freezes, whenever that is, I think we'll see this begin. Because again, they no longer place any trust or confidence in negotiations. I don't think we can say anything to the Russians at this point that would persuade them to stop, which we've effectively tried to do. I think we've said, look, we don't want you to do this. And that goes back to this so-called coalition of the willing,
right,
that they've been trying to build. That we'll use the coalition of the willing. I don't think the Russians care. I think the Russians will say, fine, if they get in the way, they're going to be destroyed. It's unfortunate, but I think that's where we are now.
I think you're right. And I think that's a very astute assessment of what's going on here. Maybe politically, it's not the greatest move, but at the end of the day, it doesn't seem they really care politically. Right now, it seems it was a very smart military move to both save troops and armament, save materiel, and reposition.
Yeah, there's one thing, if I could say it, that it might make it clear to people. During the Battle of the Bulge in December 1944, when the Germans attacked, initially, there were orders that went out, dig in. Fight, you know, don't move, don't fall back. And in fact, we had a large armored force that was transferred from Third Army north to fight under Ridgway, who was a corps commander in the 18th Airborne Corps against the Germans. And he gave the instructions to this armored force under a general named Bruce Clark, who became a four-star after the war and became very famous as a result of this incident. But he told Bruce Clark, I want you to take your men and your tanks and your artillery. I want you to dig everything in and fight for 2 days. So he looked. He said, yes, okay, fine. He went up there. He didn't do it. And instead, he fought for 5 days, and he conducted a fighting withdrawal. In other words, he fell back in front of the Germans. He ran the Germans out of fuel. Ridgway was furious and said he was a coward and wanted to relieve him. Field Marshal Montgomery intervened. He said, no, he's doing exactly the right thing. Run the Germans out of fuel. They don't have enough fuel. Let them extend themselves. They did. And of course, we know the rest of the story.
Well, and you're right about, we've seen reports over the past 24 hours of the Russians using inflatable tanks to try to exhaust Ukrainian munitions. Right.
course.
So they're trying to, yeah, trying to starve them out. So really, really fascinating. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. Colonel, always great to see you. We thank you for your analysis here. We'll be watching this very closely. If we don't get to talk to you beforehand, and hopefully we won't, maybe we'll have a peaceful Thanksgiving. And then that's the hope, I hope. Colonel, great to see you, and much love to you and your family.
Thanks very much. Same to you.
And, you know, it's amazing that the war drums continue to be beat. Why the White House continues to push for war, you know, push and try to provoke the bear in China, and continuing, of course, to send as many munitions and weapons to Ukraine. You know, maybe we thought, hey, after this election, we would have had, you know, we would have had some cooler heads prevail somehow. But of course not. They're going to ramp up again, sending as many weapons and money as they can to Ukraine. It's never going. It doesn't seem like it's going to stop anytime soon. And it's a totally an absolute fool's errand at this point. We've got a super chat here. Thank you for your super chat from. Just zipped by me here. Goran says, Shoigu said Ukraine lost 120,000 troops, or no, 12,000 troops, dozens of planes and copters and hundreds of tanks alone, but Russians lost 1,500 to 2,000 soldiers, of which a quarter are dead, probably costly piece of terrain. That's right. So, interesting. I think it's much higher than that. Don't know the 12,000, according to the sources I'm hearing, it's way higher than that. And maybe they're just being nice about it. Maybe they're just being nice about those numbers. We've got more news to get to here on the show. By the way, people want to know that Colonel Douglas McGregor was a former advisor to the Secretary of Defense. A very smart person, very smart person. And, of course, the people in Washington don't like that he tells the truth. They absolutely do not. He's one of those people that tells the truth and they don't like it. And he exposes what they're doing. So always a welcome voice here on the show. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about these excess deaths, not only in the United States, but in the UK and around the world. Some of the new troubling numbers are out and really, really devastating. We will talk about that. I'm sure David and Philip will have something to say. People are wondering, hey, where's Natalie tonight? Well, again, she is not here. She's not feeling well. And we have a six-year-old that is had 101 degree fever. And so fighting that fever over the past number of hours. So she's watching her, and they're both sick together, curled up in bed. So not feeling well. She's been she's sick day today. So knock on wood, it's been running through the whole house lately. You know, it's like that's how it goes too. It hits all the kids, and it cascades through. Yeah, so we're going to be talking about that. We're going to talk about also coming up on the show, we're going to be looking at the new White House media plans, the social media contracts that they are signing to censor you, to not only censor, but also to surveil you. We'll be looking at that. That just happened over the past 24 hours. And yes, I know it's up here on the screen. You won't believe it. We said this at the beginning of the show. Just read that. If you can't see it, if you're driving or you're listening on audio, it says Fetterman for president. That's no joke. That's being talked about right now. We'll tell you where. We'll tell you who's saying it, and we'll have a discussion about. And I think it's part of a larger plan. I think it's a part of a larger plan. Don't laugh it off. Don't laugh it off. I know it sounds crazy, but don't laugh it off, because I think that's exactly what they want. So we'll get there in a second. But first. Are you interested in, you know, I mean, trying to actually save your family's finances right now? Because first, the economy is awful right now. And if you're relying on a 401k plan or an IRA for your retirement, you are in for a world of hurt. Well, what if you could invest in real estate that produces monthly cash flow and is 100% done for you, meaning you don't have to hire contractors or hire property managers or any of that? I actually run a company called Morris Invest. Yes, I'm an entrepreneur. Some of you might know that. Some of you might not know that. But I've been a real estate investor for many, many years. And I believe it's the number one way to protect your wealth against what these globalists are doing to our money right now. It's the ultimate hedge against inflation. And it has been for 4,000 years. Just like precious metals, but I believe it's even better than precious metals, because you get the enormous tax benefits of it as well. One of our company is the number one full service rental real estate company in the United States. So all I want you to do, come over and just check it out. If you're new to this and you're like, hey, maybe that's for me, I'd like to check it out. Come over to our website, go to morrisinvest.com. That's my last name, morrisinvest.com. We are the number one full service rental real estate company in the United States. And no one even comes close to what we're able to do to provide customer service. From ground up construction, brand new construction properties built from the ground up with a minimum 18% internal rate of return. So the reason I'm telling you this, because my team came to me today and said, hey, we've got 42 properties available right now, 42 houses that are available before the end of the year. And you could invest in brand new construction real estate in the best rental markets in the country. We're talking Texas and Missouri. Best rental markets in the country, fully done for you. Now we have, again, financing built into all of the properties. And we work with over 100 different lenders. So my team this morning said, Clayton, tell your redacted audience right now, we have 42 homes left for sale and they are first come, first serve. So all you need to do, if you're any of you guys are interested in investing in real estate and actually protecting your family's wealth, and yes, we work with all sorts of international investors from Australia, the UK, it doesn't matter. All you need to do is go to our website and you can get the incredible tax benefits. So just go to morrisinvest.com and click on the book a call button and visit our website. So here's the book a call button right there. Just book a free call. A little calendar will pop up. You put in your email address and your phone number, and then one of our team members will give you a call and we'll have a discussion about real estate and if it's right for you. Again, only do it if you're interested in real estate investing and actually protecting your family's finances with a vehicle that's worked for 4,000 years. So again, morrisinvest.com. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for checking that out. Really, really appreciate it. So where's everyone joining us from tonight? I'm going to see, I always like to see where the furthest people around the world are joining us from. Do we have any people from Iceland? What about?
Have we had any Antarcticas yet? Like we were hoping or asking.
Any Antarctica, any people in Antarctica? Yeah.
We'll accept North or South Pole.
North or South Pole. Anybody from... All right, let's name a spot and see how far away they are, by the way. Alberta?
Hey, Rumpelgold, just real quick. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, Bulgaria, Alberta. What did Rumpelgold say? Super chat?
Rumpelgold said, Clayton, a year ago, you sent me to your tax people. Being a new actor is daunting because they don't take our taxes or don't take out taxes. Your people helped me. Thank you.
Oh, you are welcome. You are welcome. Look, I'm telling you right now, the way that these globalists are trying to destroy the currency, remember, you know, what the United States dollar is not money, okay? It's currency. And when we took it off the gold standard in the early 1970s, we destroyed the American dollar as money. It's no longer money, right? It's not tied to gold. It's not tied to silver. It's not tied to real estate. What it's tied to is debt. So America is a debt-based economy. And by the way, that's how Europe is constructed. So when they look and see these BRICS nations right now, they see Russia, China, India, South Africa, Brazil, and they're building a currency backed by actual tangible assets. That scares the hell out of them. That's why we did a whole segment on China tonight, because when you hear the White House over the past 24 hours talking about, well, China looks like they're about to invade Taiwan, we better ramp things up. Antony Blinken 3 weeks ago says, well, you know, they're getting close. They're moving up on their timeline to invade Taiwan. Okay, all of these things should start ringing, you know, alarm bells in your head. And of course, the United States dollar, $31 trillion in debt in the United States. Interest rates continuing to go up. It's really, really devastating what's coming. And I don't think people
well,
have
and also,
any
when you
idea.
Look at, like, history, like Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, Iran, they were all talking about trading oil in the dinar, which is gold, actual gold, like gold-backed. And a lot of speculation is that's why we invaded them, because they were getting ready to start trading in gold rather than the U.S. dollar. So, you know, we're so afraid that our dollar is just going to collapse at any time. That's why we try to, you know, go and take all the oil, because that's the only thing holding us up.
Yeah, and I've got a video coming out later tonight where specifically on gold that we're going to talk about, because there are countries, I mean, a lot of these central banks right now, while they won't publicly talk about it, They won't publicly talk about the fact that they want these tangible assets, like actual, I mean, if, you know, I'm talking real estate, gold, silver, tangible assets. They won't talk about it because it, you know, would go against the idea of their currency. They are actually actively trying to buy up as much of this as they can right now, quietly. So it's happening, guys.
Well, and they also don't want to say it because if they say it, then the public's going to go buy it. You know what I mean? So they want to keep it quiet so that we don't go invest in a bunch of gold.
Yeah, and they don't want you to own homes anymore. I mean, this is the thing. This is what the globalists don't want. They want you to literally be a part of their like vassal state. They control everything. They don't want you to own land. They don't want you to own property. They don't want you to own things. Remember, don't own anything and you'll be happy. That's the goal of the Great Reset. That's absolutely what they want. And you can see it. It's not a conspiracy theory. They say it. It's printed, and they're already doing it. So, you know, at what point do you get rolled over? It's almost like, did you ever read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? And
I love the movie. I never read the book.
Well, the book is like, you know, they're just sitting there around having beers, like they can't believe that really they're about to literally destroy the Earth, and they're just like, and they don't believe it. They see the spaceships there. They're like, you've got 15 minutes. Until we destroy everything. Like, really? Now, come on, that's not it. Let's go to the pub. You want to go to the pub? They don't believe it. They don't believe it. Anyway, we got more news to get to here. Let's talk about these excess deaths. So why are so many people dying this year when you compare it with last year? Now, I say something is worth investigating, wouldn't you? Like, how many of you actually think that we should start looking into this more deeply? I do. A few weeks ago, we brought you the data. The data is absolutely troubling on the significant rise in excess deaths in the UK and the stunning data in the United States. Now, the data shows that young people are dying at an alarming rate. Many of these people are from the age of 0 to 24 years old. So that's an awful number, right? We can see people, okay, over 66 years old, over 65 years old. I get it, right? Maybe there's seasonal adjustments and but 0 to 24 years old? What the hell's happening here? A few weeks ago, we saw this. This is towards the end of September. We showed you this chart. Now, this is from the CDC. Okay, this is the CDC's own website. And in red X's at the top there, what you can see are these are all excess. All of the areas where there's like little plus signs above that red line that looks like a wave. Okay, all of those above that are excess. Abnormal, and it's growing. Now, if you look at the current trajectory of excess deaths in the United States, take a look at this. Now, we'll get to the UK in a second, but look at the current excess deaths. This is from this afternoon, okay? This is the CDC's own website data. So just look here as we track up, and you can see as we continue to go up this steep hill, climbing, and continuing to grow. Excess deaths the week of this ending last week, okay, the 43rd week. Look at that. Astonishing. And the cumulative excess deaths in the United States from 0 to 64 years old. From 0 to 64 years old, okay? Now, if we scroll down a little bit more, and you'll see from that's 65 plus right there, okay? That's a little bit higher. But then look at this. 0 to 24 years old. 0 to 24 years old. Astonishing. Look at that chart. I mean, it's not hard to, you sort of sit there with your, when I look at like my mouth's open when I'm looking at these data points, you know?
Well, and that's the thing. It's
like a ski slope.
And we expect our mainstream media to like, you know, like, why aren't they going through these numbers? Why is this? I just cannot comprehend why these people live in our society. They have kids. They have friends of their kids. Like, why are they not concerned with these numbers and talking about this on mainstream media? Like, we could potentially, I don't think we will now because I think the narrative is starting to open up a little bit and YouTube's getting more lax on the rules. But at one point, if we talked about this very thing, we would be suspended.
And I spent this afternoon because I had a lot of data points that I wanted to hit on. So I'm sitting there. Look, YouTube provides us with the largest possible audience. Hopefully you watching right now, I mean, we've got upwards of 30,000 people on all of our platforms combined watching right now. I mean, think about that. Like Coldplay is putting on a concert in London and the crowd size is 20,000, right? So there are more people watching our show right now than at a Coldplay concert. This Christmas concert coming up in London. That's crazy. And so we have a large audience on YouTube. And when I go through the terms of service and I'm looking at, okay, what are we allowed to say? Because I love Rumble and all of our Rumble watchers as well. But you like, we are able to reach so many more people to spread this news. It's, you know, sad, but true. Right. And so we get, you know, we've been totally deplatformed on Facebook. We've been blocked and banned and shadow banned. We can't, anything we publish on there is like no views at all. Zero. Cause they block it. So I have to go through the terms of service on YouTube to find out what specifically are we even allowed to talk about. Now they've adjusted their COVID guidelines. They've kind of flip-flopped on where they were last year, which we covered here on the show. And then of course we've now things have changed so much that we have to kind of check it on a weekly basis almost, you know, we have to like go in and see, okay, did they change this now? Can we talk about what can we say on the vaccines? What can we say about booster shots? It's ridiculous. And I think some of this stuff has become like,
that's become like one of my favorite hobbies. It's just that my weekly, okay, what are the rules on YouTube this week? So, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy. And then, you know, what's amazing is if you look at the election stuff, that's a sideball issue or, you know, a rabbit hole issue. But just looking at the election stuff, right, what you're allowed to talk about. Now they've just updated them this week. You can't even talk about the Brazilian election that just happened last week. Like they're all over that already. They've literally got that in there. They've got the German election. I mean, don't ask questions. Don't ask questions. So what we try to do here is provide you with the data. You make your own assessment. This is coming right from the CDC's website. Okay. These are not my opinion. These are not my data points. These are the CDC's guidelines and website data. Okay. So look at this. This is the state by state breakdown of this data. Just to be clear, YouTube, this is the CDC's data. So this is the cumulative, just general average, okay, of increased excess deaths. And here, that's 6%. That's a 6% here at the top, okay? Now it goes state by state. So as we scroll down here, this is the excess deaths in Alabama. That's, and look at these studies, 24% in Arizona increase. 13% Jeez. Arkansas excess deaths, or 7% as of last week. Look at this one. 14% in California. And then you get some weird ones like in Colorado down 7%, Connecticut down. So then that weights the average down. So when with the beginning we showed you that 6%. But then look at these increases all across these states. Delaware, massive increases, right? The District of Columbia, oddly, really, really down for some reason this past week. And then Florida up. All of these states up, 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 up. And in the UK. So let's talk about the UK, a stunning bit of news, a new data since we last reported this. Here's the Telegraph. This Telegraph story is really eye-opening, and you should all read it. It's a subscription service. You know, I hate that I have to pay for some of these big publications like this, but I do because sometimes we feature them here on the show, and it's important for us to do it, and I pay for it, so you don't have to. So I'll kind of go through what this Telegraph story says. Rising non-COVID excess deaths reveal the disastrous legacy of the pandemic. And it says, when Britain first locked down in March 23, 2020, the average daily death rate from COVID was around 213, triggering understandable alarm and the ushering in of strict restrictions. Now, a similar number of unexpected deaths are occurring each day, the majority of which are not primarily caused by coronavirus. Now, I'm quoting this Telegraph piece. These are not my words. Yet there is largely silence from the government and health service, it says. Data from the Office of National Statistics, ONS, shows that in the past 6 months, there have been more excess deaths from causes other than COVID than deaths due to coronavirus for the entire year. So what is it then? Wouldn't you like to know?
Well, in that first sentence, too, like it's saying, Philip, if you can pull that sentence, that document back up,
it's so
that I can
small.
Read that first sentence.
Now a similar.
It says,
Yeah, go ahead.
No, the first one where it says the average daily death rate from COVID was around 213. Now, we don't know. They're saying from COVID, but we've shown with the Freedom of Information Act that it was with COVID. So I wonder if that number is the accurate number of from or with.
With. Yeah, this is the question, right? So the report goes on. Data from the Office of National Statistics, the ONS, shows that in the past 6 months, there have been more excess deaths from causes other than COVID than deaths due to coronavirus for the entire year. Figures reveal there were 18,394 deaths due to COVID recorded this year in England and Wales. But since May, there have been 23,195 excess deaths where the primary cause was another condition. Some of those people did die with a coronavirus infection, but it was not the main reason for the death. Unbelievable. The excess deaths in the UK. Take a look at this latest data. Now, the Daily Skeptic has this put together. And these are in here in red that that Will Jones has highlighted from the Daily Skeptic shows. I don't know if we have that chart, do we, or is it on, just on my laptop here? You can take this on my screen here, Philip. Sorry. So this excess deaths in red. These are the most recent few from the end of. From the beginning of this year. These are the 5-year averages for the weeks 1 to 8 in 2022 are affected by the COVID-19 wave in early 2021. Right. So that was the COVID wave right there. In early 2021. So what the hell is this in red? Can anyone answer me? So COVID wave came. Everyone went and did something. Governments mandated people to do stuff. You know what I'm talking
about.
Can
we ask the question about the whether or not that's correlated with the, the J?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I'm implying here, right? I'm not saying it is, and I'm not saying there's a correlation.
Nope.
But the Daily Skeptic is saying there's a correlation based on some of this data, and wouldn't we like to know if there is? And this is why there should be an investigation. A new report out today from the Daily Skeptic goes into that specific data I was just showing you. It says the death crisis continues with 1,232 excess deaths, 12% above the 5-year average. Registered in England and Wales in the week ending October 28th, according to the ONS. Of these, 804 of them were attributed to an underlying cause other than COVID-19, bringing the total excess non-COVID deaths since the wave began in April to 23,000 compared to the 1,200 last time. 23,000 to 1,200. So here's the most stunning data. An average of 1,564 extra deaths per week. Throughout 2020, that number was 315. Throughout 2021, that number was 1,322. Now, since May of 2022, since May of this year, 24,440 non-COVID deaths. Nobody who's in charge of the NHS or any of the health, the health secretaries are talking about this at all. I don't hear anybody at the CDC about this.
Where are the government, alarmists right now? Like, if it was some, the virus, they're like totally alarmed. But like these numbers are, and that's why I was always like, it's such a farce because there's no alarm about heart disease. There's no alarm about, alcohol induced deaths. Like, they don't care actually about the deaths. Because it's not, they can't make it alarming.
Yeah.
So, the fact that nobody is out here yelling about this is laughable.
And, the line that we've been hearing from like the BBC and others is that, there's a backlog of people that couldn't get health care, right? So there's, of course, you're going to see additional problems right now. And perhaps, maybe, but at what point does that line or that narrative start to not actually hold up anymore? And I think we're starting to see the line right now. I think we're starting to see the cracks in that story, especially when you have, when you look at the heart related deaths, that's the big one. So I get the cancer piece of this, right? I get that. But in 0 to 24 year olds, What? Can someone explain that to me? No, you can't. So why don't we have a massive investigation? Why don't we have full transparency on this? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because the biopharmaceutical complex doesn't want us to. This story out today. Slap in the face from Pfizer. Pfizer chief, this was on an earnings call to investors, says the Pfizer chief, Borrella, says that that COVID will continue to be a multi-billion dollar franchise for Pfizer for many years to come, he says. As the firm prepares to stick
10,000... They refer to it as a franchise.
Yeah.
Think about that. They're calling that a franchise like it's some kind of like moneymaker. And, mm-hmm. And they,
like a McDonald's.
So whether you believe like the data or whatever, but the fact that, you know, via the information they put out, a lot of people died and they're calling it a franchise. Like it's a celebratory thing. Like we are going to still make billions. And a lot of people don't realize that 9 new billionaires were created in the pharmaceutical industry during this pandemic. And they have made record profits at this time. So it's been 100% about the money, and the fact that they call it, that's just like, That stuff infuriates me.
Yeah, and so they're going to mark this up 10,000% markup on vaccines. 10,000%. Money's good. Price hike is great. Price hike is a result of dwindling government funds for vaccine doses, they say. Oh, because the government's now, so now we just need to jack up the price. The uninsured population will be on the hook for the out-of-pocket costs of the shots. Pfizer has earned about $80 billion on vaccines and the antiviral drug Paxlovid.
Well, and now that they're going to mandate it, potentially, I don't know if that's moved forward, but mandate it potentially for kids going into school, you know, who's paying for that? Are the parents, are the school boards paying for that? Like when kids have to do that, it's generally on the parents, right?
I suppose.
And their insurance?
I think it'll come through the insurance, exactly. Yeah, yeah. The company projects $102 billion in total revenue this year with the vaccine and its antiviral Paxlovid, more than double the company's revenue in 2019. So, again, if you think they cost, according to the Daily Mail, experts have estimated that Pfizer's vaccine cost just $1.18 per dose to make. So charging $130 per dose would represent a markup of more than 10,000%, according to the Daily Mail. And of course, this idea of the no cost to Americans, that, you know, vaccines costing nothing for Americans, that's about to run out. So all of this will then move towards the insurance companies. They think that's great. They think that's great. And they think that this is going to be like the seasonal flu. We're going to treat this as the seasonal flu vaccine. He called it David Denton, the CFO of Pfizer, said, I think if you look out longer term, the franchise is going to be a multi-billion dollar franchise in the respect that this is going to be somewhat like a flu, a sustained flu, but actually more deadly than the flu. So I got to keep that, make sure we're scared about it, just to make sure that we go and get these things and all of these shots.
You know what's crazy too? Is the fact that we, the American people, we paid for the research and development on these vaccines. Okay, we paid that. They didn't have to pay for marketing because the government did it for them. So what do they have invested in making all this money? Pretty much absolutely nothing. Like we pretty much paid for that because we pay the government. So we paid for the R&D. We paid the government to market it for them. And therefore, it's like basically all profit to them.
Yeah. Oh, it's 100% profit. $100 billion of profit.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then, of course, they have immunity, right? They have immunity for any of this problems. And then, of course, the shadiness that they unfolded on the EU as well. 10 doses for every European citizen or every European resident. 10 doses per. That's the deal that you cut with the EU. Shouldn't we look into that? I guess not. Hey, we've got more news to get to on your Thursday. This is Testosterone Thursday. David's in the house. Phillip's in the house. I'm in the house. Natalie is not here today. She's not feeling well. The baby's not feeling well. So we don't have a baby. We call her the baby. She's 6 years old, but she is the baby in our house. We are going to talk about what's going on with this White House spying operation, this new censorship, this new partnership that they've just penned, that's going to be going through over 200,000 different sources of data to monitor what you're doing just about at any hour of the day, online or offline, so that they can marshal their censorship police to come after you. We'll look at that latest deal from the White House, which was quietly rolled out just after the midterm elections. We're also going to look at this story about John Fetterman, because the some Democrats and media folks are already floating the idea of John Fetterman for president. Boy, the paint's not even dry on that one, is it? And they're already thinking that. I mean, I think this is part of a larger plan that I'm going to talk about coming up. But first, I love this idea from Manscaped. You know, one of my favorite sponsors here on the show. So here's an idea. I love this idea. This holiday season, I'm going to be giving thanks to our friends over at Manscaped. Everyone loves turkey and stuffing, but you'll be looking like the dessert with the help of Manscaped's Performance Package 4.0. Here's what I want you to do at the Thanksgiving table when you're hanging out with Uncle, you know, Uncle John comes over to the house, or Uncle Eddie. Would you tell him about, hey, just bring it up in casual conversation while you guys are having dinner and just say, hey, guys, I got 20% off Manscaped. And people are like, oh, honey, what's Manscaped about? Well, Mom, I like to, you know, keep everything grooming nice. Oh, son, I told you not to talk about this kind of stuff at the dinner. Well, Mom, it's waterproof. Like, when I'm in the shower, I'm able to, you know, shave my sideburns and do some other things. Make sure that everything is trimmed up nice. They'll love you at your Thanksgiving dinner. You can bring this up. You can tell them about the new Weed Whacker, the ear and nose hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver, the ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, the Performance Boxer Briefs, and the travel bag to hold all of your goodies. Think of it as I love this, as a cornucopia for your balls. That's right. Their lawnmower 4.0, their lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. David uses the lawnmower every day on your beard, don't you? I think you do, right?
Well, not every day, but I do. I do use it. I keep it trimmed, and then I have the nose and ear trimmer as well.
Oh, I love it. I love it too.
Yeah.
I love my Manscaped stuff. No hygiene routine is complete without Manscaped signature deodorant as well. They are fantastic. Give the gift of Manscaped. It's the ultimate hack to becoming. I mean, just put it in the Christmas stocking this year. I mean, it is the perfect gift, and you're going to get 20% off with free shipping. I love that thing right there on your screen. It's got such a long battery life, the Weed Whacker. I don't think I've ever charged it. I can't remember charging it. It lasts forever. It's really fantastic. So here's what I want you to do. Go to manscaped.com right now, manscaped.com, and I want you to use the code redacted when you're checking out. So you can get 20% off with free shipping right now if you go to manscaped.com. And when you're there, use the coupon code redacted. That's going to get you 20% off. Make sure you check out Manscaped. Huge fan of what they offer. Thanks to Manscaped for supporting our show. Well, the deep state censorship of political opponents is about to get much worse. A new report from Reclaim the Net claims that the Biden administration is about to sign a contract with Data Miner, which is a licensing deal for the company's product that is used to monitor social media. Stop me if you've heard this story before. This will give them the power to monitor over 200,000 online sources of data. Then the White House can leap into action and basically censor anything that they want based on what they see after maybe they're going to set up a whole new office that's going to be monitoring all of this. Someone who knows all about being censored and deplatformed is Dr. Shiva Ayadora. He uncovered the deep censorship infrastructure between big tech and the federal government. Dr. Shiva, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to get into what you uncovered and just how big this deep state infrastructure actually is. But first, I want to get your reports on this, get your thoughts on this new report out today about the Biden administration looking to monitor over 200,000 sources of data. Does this surprise you at all?
No, it doesn't, Clayton. A little bit of background. You know, I went through the Data Miner, which is a tool that they're going to be using. It's a licensing deal for, I think, about 30 different licenses. What's fascinating about this is, you know, I have a sort of an intimate experience in this from the science and technology standpoint. Back in 1993, you know, when I was doing my PhD in what's called AI and pattern analysis, I actually won a contest to automatically analyze and route and categorize email. And it was a contest that was sponsored by the Executive Office of the President when Clinton was there. And the government at that time, you know, there's some legitimate uses because you want to use it against foreign adversaries for threats to the president, right, et cetera. So I ended up winning that contest, and my technology won, and I ended up creating a for-profit company in the field of customer service. So if you send an email, for example, to American Express, our technology would figure out and route it to the right people. Now, the government was more interested in using that, you know, at the surface level that was put out for monitoring threats to the president, threats to U.S. citizens. Now, technologies like DataMiner, and in fact, what I built back then, could easily be used for monitoring on U.S. citizens. And this is what the issue is. Obviously, governments want to protect their borders and their citizens from foreign adversaries. But the reality is technologies like this are being used against U.S. citizens. In fact, there's a whole technology infrastructure. And that's what we discovered back in 2020, which is not just any one player or just one technology, Clayton. It's an entire system of technologies, a network of operations involving academia. It involves the government, and essentially private companies where you can launder censorship. But tools like DataMiner have been around for a long time. When I was at MIT in 1981, when I came as an undergraduate, the entire third floor of the MIT Computer Science Lab, everyone knew was run by the NSA. So we have to understand that every 4 or 5 years, the news will put out stuff like this, little piecemeal pieces. And I think we need to get a little bit smarter as a public to recognize that the technology which was potentially used, like DataMiner, which they say was used by the Air Force in that article, right?
Right.
For foreign adversaries, now is being pointed at U.S. citizens through this domestic censorship infrastructure that we discovered in 2020, which allows government at this layer using a nonprofit NGOs to launder censorship. And that NGO infrastructure was funded not only by DHS, but by Pierre Omidyar, who's a founder and the funder of The Intercept.
So when the Department of Homeland Security comes out on 9/11, and you have Mayorkas saying, you know, we're not so much focused on foreign adversaries anymore. Now the real threat is at home. He's just representing a small piece of this. So your research has uncovered that is really the DHS piece of this. It's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to just talk about DHS leaks in many ways is a subterfuge. It is a misdirection. One of the things that occurred, Clayton, from what we spoke about last time, is, you know, what was racking my brain was here in 2020, we had figured out not just the tip of the iceberg, but the entire iceberg, that entire network diagram, which includes multiple layers, government, academic organizations, who created many, many different systems architecture playbooks, which is right on that diagram at winbackfreedom.com. Those architectural diagrams, when we put them all together, out of that emerged this domestic censorship infrastructure network diagram. We call it the government and big tech infrastructure diagram, which is out there, which has been out there for 2 years. And when you look at that diagram, the basis of our lawsuit was that we had discovered that government over here is not supposed to monitor U.S. citizens. It's a violation, a gross violation of the First Amendment. So what we found in these documents, they said, was in order to monitor U.S. citizens, we had to fill in the gap with non-governmental entities who they could launder the censorship through. Well, that fill-in-the-gap non-governmental entity was called the Center for Internet Security, which was not only funded by DHS, but none other than Pierre Omidyar himself, who over here is also the Intercept funder and founder. So, and then when you look at this whole network, DHS is one little piece of it. You have CISA, you have Harvard Belfer School involved, you have all the big tech companies involved, you have the families like the Murdochs, the Zuckerbergs, the Omidyars, and then you have the AP and news organizations. It's all one systems network. So out of that systems network, Clayton, to simply pick out the DHS and leak it itself is an intelligence misdirection operation. And that's what The Intercept did. So when I started, you know, after we spoke, you know, I was speaking to a very good friend of mine, and I said, you know what? It seems like recurrently you have the big story, the big iceberg, and somewhere along the process, they have it down to a science. Conceal, then plagiarize, step two, then misattribute, step three, prevaricate and lie, hijack the original story, and disseminate a small piece of it. And that is what The Intercept, Fang, and Lippenstein did. I mean, come on. You can just type in Google and you'll see on Influence Watch that Pierre Omidyar funded the Center for Internet Security, which houses ISAC, which is the clearinghouse for the communications, which we brought at 2 years ago. But if you look today, they amplify their small tip of their iceberg. And this is a misdirection, because what it does is, in a recurrent process of news dissemination, the public thinks, oh, wow, we got the quote unquote truth. Let's move on. This process, interestingly, Clayton, I found out recently, is called a limited hangout.
So they have a name for this. Where they release a small piece of information as a misdirection.
Yeah.
They call it a limited hangout. Now, where does this come from? Who came up with this name? Where does this term come from?
Fascinating. So since we spoke, you know, separate from doing the stuff that I do as an independent journalist and a researcher, I also run a company which we do medical research. So I was on a phone call on a scientific research with one of the largest cancer institutions talking about science. At the end of that call, they had seen this news and they said, Dr. Shiva, tell us what's going on. And I told them, you know, there's this very interesting process. One of the guys on the phone call was an MD, PhD in cancer research. He said, you know what? That what you just told me is a term called a limited hangout. And I go, what does that mean? He goes, where they release a limited portion of the story, they let it hang out. And this term came out of the Nixon Watergate tapes. Apparently, Nixon knew that he was seriously involved in the entire burglary, et cetera. So him and Haldeman in those tapes are saying, why don't we do a limited hangout? Let the story limited, a small piece of it hang out. And so when I did some research on this, and anyone can find this, a guy called David Brown, and it's out there. He says there is a term in art and politics and he defines this among intelligence professionals that is known as a limited hangout. Whenever one's veil of secrecy is penetrated, spies or politicians can employ misdirection to distract the public. The technique involves disclosing a self-contained and sensational, relatively benign version of the story to lay out all the cards on the table and assuage concerns that anyone is trying to hide anything. Upon learning the quote-unquote truth, quote, like the DHS leaks as presented, the public is mollified and moves on with no real scrutiny of note, missing the real story altogether. They would acknowledge certain events and withhold others, with the effect of clearing, in this case, they talked about Nixon, the president, in this case, Pierre Omidyar, of any wrongdoing. It's a classic technique. It's almost like they have a scientific capability, and it's part of the intelligence network. So when I stepped back and looked at it, it's like you just use your rational mind. Here's Pierre Omidyar, who's, by the way, everywhere. He's the one who was involved. Anyone do a little bit of research, and we have it all on winbackfreedom.com. We've documented it from other sources. He's involved in the intelligence work over in Ukraine, right? He's involved in putting out fake news over here. He's actually involved in developing technologies like DataMiner to watch people's behaviors and figure out how to, quote unquote, intercept these communications. So what does Pierre Omidyar do? He's an intelligence asset, Clayton, when you really put it together. Over here, he funds all these intelligence and media organizations. He funded the Center for Internet Security. And if you look at what he particularly funded was how government, the protocol, would communicate through the NGO, through the ISACs, to the big tech organizations. And we've had it up there for 2 years. Glenn Greenwald, we sent it to him.
Yeah.
The ACLU knew about it. And now they amplify the half-truth. So I have to come to the logical conclusion. Here's Pierre Omidyar. He creates the intercept for fearless and courageous, you know, aggressive investigative communication. Over here, he's involved in the censorship network, and Fang and Klippenstein purposefully leave out his name. So our work is the original work that was wholesale plagiarized, wholesale put out there as a part of this limited hangout. And so I think what the public needs to understand is, yeah, they'll once know, oh, data miner, this and this. And this has been going on for a long time before Snowden came out. Anyone in technology knew that the NSA has been involved in spying on all of us. The issue is, how does a news organization release a story in these limited hangouts to assuage the public? And so we move on. But we're not going to let them get away with this time, Clayton, because we did that story. In fact, if you look on my Facebook post, I wrote to the Pulitzer Committee and the Polk Awards Club, because these guys are probably going to try to get a Pulitzer out of this. And we want to cut that off. And we've documented that if they're going to give a Pulitzer, it should go to the person who did it. And I say this without arrogance. We're the ones who busted our butts to do this. We were like day and night. That diagram is another PhD thesis. The important thing is, when you study that diagram, it's everyone's involved. Harvard is involved. The Belfer Institute's involved. Stanford is involved. They have created a domestic censorship infrastructure so they can do an end run around the First Amendment. They can launder censorship. And those terms we put out there in 2020. So you have to start wondering, my conclusion of all this is anyone who's leaking these so-called big news and they're getting major news media visibility, they're part of it.
That's well, we know it's end. One. Yes, it is one big, it is one big censorship party, and they are all part of it. They are all part of this one deep state cabal.
And they have this limited hangout feature now, which is a wonderful part of it, because in a democracy, people like you and I, we will do research. We will, you know, do the hard work. So when the big iceberg of real research comes out, they have this methodology to release a piece of it to mollify the public, but hide the big piece. And that's exactly what the Internet Intercept DHS leaks is about. No one should give them any credit. They plagiarized. They did a limited hangout, period. And in winbackfreedom.com, we've updated the front part of that website, and we've laid it all out so that all the contents from 2 years ago is there, plus our new analysis.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Shiva, keep fighting the good fight. And I wanted to get you on to talk about this latest news plus this limited hangout. So thank you so much for your continued work on this and being a ray of hope against this big government and big data tech censorship. Thank you so much for joining us.
One final point I want to make, Clayton, and I want your audience to know this, that it's more than a ray of hope we have now, because we've built our own independent movement, truthfreedomhealth.com. We had all these independent journalists, others, networks of people. During those 2 years, they got the story out. Over 200 million people saw all the content we'd done, and that's also documented. And that's only the way out of this, Clayton. We have to build our own independent news and always put it out first and keep it in front facing. So I'm glad you're doing this piece, and you did it before, because we cannot give credit to those people who are doing these limited hangouts. And credit matters, because it drives people to understand who are their real leaders. People come bottoms up, not these top-down people who get all the visibility and are actually there to crunch the actual stories and the actual truth. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Well, my pleasure. And I want all of our audiences watching right now, I don't usually ask you to do this, but please, you know, share this story. Just click on the little share button and you know, share it out with a friend. Send it as a text message to somebody who, you know, is constantly consuming mainstream media, these news organizations, and just tell them, watch this interview with Dr. Shiva. Just watch this. It'll open your eyes. So Dr. Shiva, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Clayton. Be well.
It's really stunning. It really is. When you look at how all of these guys are in cahoots and it's just one big organization, for us to understand how this big data operates and how these systems operate, they're operating at a whole other level. The other day I saw a comment in one of our YouTube channels that you guys are stupid if you think that they're just blindly doing this, kind of like they don't have a plan involved in this. It's absolutely orchestrated. And I think that's absolutely right. This is not just something that they're doing willy-nilly. They've sort of fallen into this stuff.
It was funny because when we first had Dr. Shiva on, I was like, it was information I had never heard, but not jaw-dropping, because it didn't surprise me in the least. Like, It was like, well, yeah, I guess there's proof, but, you know, it was like I never really felt like I needed proof, because it was just something I just knew. You just know.
And to see it all in the chart that they like presented at this court hearing, and now has, you know, been verified, and they like document all of this and all of these connections, it's unbelievable. And again, it's amazing to have these guys, these billionaire funders on the one side that are literally trying to do all of this backdoor censorship to control the narrative. And then on the other side, they fund news organizations so that they can play both sides of it and they can feed them information. And as we featured the CIA on our show before, and whistleblowers from the CIA and ex-CIA who've told us this is how they plant stories. They play both sides of it. You know, they play this side, they play that side. They don't They don't feed the stories to one side. They make sure that it's kind of pitting it against each other to share competing stories, to confuse. It's a brilliant strategy. Absolutely crazy. Well, we've got more news to get to here on the show. If you do subscribe to the channel, Your name will pop up here on the big screen over to my right side here. Natalie's not here tonight because she's not feeling well. She would usually be sitting here, but over on the big screen, your name will pop up there. Earlier in the show, very beginning of the show, Jim, I'm going to go back and see if I can go all the way to the beginning. Jim said something like, he said, I didn't get to see my name pop up on the big screen there. Jim William, I think was his name. Now I'm going to get it wrong. But Jim said, I subscribed. My name didn't pop up on the screen because we must have been talking and it wasn't on the screen at the time. But I believe it was Jim William. So Jim, I'm saying your name now. And I also saw a super chat came in from someone in Antarctica. So we have officially our first Antarctica viewer. That's amazing.
Yay.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. We've been trying for like months to get somebody.
Now, I hope you're being honest with us. I hope you're being honest and you're not just telling us that I think that was, yeah, I think it was, I don't have the name in front of me, but we'll look in the super chats later. But anyway, all right, we've got more news to get to. I want to talk about, so this is an amazing story. So, of course, right now, I mean, we'll kind of like see where the dust settles and all of what's happened in Pennsylvania and the postmortem on ballots and voting machines and what counties were having trouble and what weren't, and you know, all of the weirdness, all of the high strangeness that happened on Tuesday. We're still pulling all of this stuff together and seeing what comes in, because it looks like Maricopa County in Arizona is not going to be decided until next week now. So there's a lot of questions, right? But Pennsylvania, all the major news organizations were ready to come right out, Fox and MSNBC and CNN, and declare Pennsylvania won for John Fetterman. Dr. Oz couldn't pull it off somehow. But John Fetterman, who suffered a stroke earlier this year, who cannot string a sentence together, who, yes, in fact, lived in his parents' basement, lived off of his parents for that many years, you know, became famous during the pandemic. Suddenly, and he's the guy, of course, wearing the hoodies, and he's out there on the campaign trail and always wearing the hoodies, and then needs some sort of an Android device, some sort of a box to be able to speak. So he wins. He somehow beats Dr. Oz. And then, unbelievably, well, maybe not unbelievably, you have mainstream media organizations and you have Democrats starting to float the idea, you know, John Fetterman, he's a guy who he bounced back from adversity. You know, he's a fighter. He's, you know, in there in Philadelphia playing Rocky music. You know, he's a fighter. He's a Pennsylvania fighter. And he might be our guy for president. He might be the guy that we're going to run as president of the United States. And you might think I'm joking. But watch MSNBC. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Watch.
Fetterman as a nominee at some point for president. I know there's some variables, obviously.
just a few.
But I just, you know, what he did in the super red, deep red parts of Pennsylvania and the way that he ran ahead of Biden, as you were saying, ran ahead of Trump. I mean, it makes you wonder about his future.
Katie Turr from MSNBC. You know, I'm going to say Fetterman, you know, I know you might be joking about it. And, you know, you get these chuckles on the set there, but they're all thinking the same thing. They're thinking, okay, I can't on television come out here and necessarily say Fetterman for president, but I'm secretly thinking it. Not me. Don't put words in my mouth. I'm saying what MSNBC is thinking and what Democratic donors are thinking. They're thinking, this guy just beat Dr. Oz, the guy that had his own television show for years, wrote books, hugely famous. He beat Dr. Oz on the Oprah Winfrey show. He had Trump come into Pennsylvania. And Fetterman...
Well, Oprah did endorse Fetterman, just to be fair.
True. Yeah, that is true. But, you know, Trump comes and endorses Dr. Oz in the dark red part of Pennsylvania. Now, when I was covering the election, I was out in Butler County. I'm from Pennsylvania, but I when Fox sent me out there to cover the election, I was in on election day, I was out in Butler County, and holy smokes. I mean, it was absolutely, there was not a Hillary Clinton sign anywhere to be seen. I mean, you're talking no freaking way are they voting for Hillary Clinton. And in fact, I was at an event where she held an event nearby the night before, and there was like no one there before election day. She was in like the dark red part of Pennsylvania, and no one was there. It was all Trump. So Trump comes to town. He's out in Luzerne County. He's doing his speeches, or he's out in Latrobe and so forth. And who knows? You know, again, I'm not discounting what went on, what nefarious things may have been at play. That's not my point here. My point is where the money flows, the bullshit goes. So all of these donors that poured money from all across the country into this race specifically to make sure that he's there. Again, it's like having an Android candidate. So I'm of the argument that they just want a meat puppet. They just want a cyborg with skin draped over it as their candidate that they can control.
And those guys are always thinking about ROI. That's like the number one thing mm-hmm. they think about. So they're not investing in these people for nothing.
No, of course. But they just want a puppet. They like they have with Biden. So what they're looking at Biden is saying, here's a guy who can't complete a sentence. Whatever we want in the deep state, he will do. Right? That's exactly what Biden does. Whatever we want in the military industrial complex and the biopharmaceutical complex, whatever we want, he does.
Well, and people were already saying he was in mental decline before he was elected. Like, this was not new news when he ran for president. And the fact that they pulled all the other, you know, Buttigieg and all the other younger candidates completely out of the race and said, let's make it Biden. I mean, that's somebody's agenda. Cause like, there's no way that they were just like, oh, this guy's just completely mentally capable of running for president. Let's put him out because we believe in him and he's going to be, you know, great. No, you're exactly right. It's because they're easy to pull the strings.
Yeah. And early on they were saying, no, Biden, no way. You know, early on Democrats were saying, no. And then it became apparent, like, he's our puppet. He's our guy. He's our puppet. And so we're throwing all of our money and attention and censorship and structure behind this guy so that we can get the job done. And you have the biggest turnout in history, and somehow Biden, you know, and then we see this, and Biden sweeps into the presidency, and they literally have a puppet in the White House that they can control from the top down. And now with Fetterman, they're going to have that in the Senate, and they can start to float this idea that he's going to be their candidate for the presidency. Because who else do Democrats have at this point that they could run? Because I don't think Biden's going to be able to run in 2024. I think that's becoming increasingly apparent from a stamina perspective, from a cognitive perspective. I don't think there's a chance.
Well, I'll say this: if he does run in 2024. It would probably most likely be against DeSantis, and DeSantis would wipe the floor with this guy.
Yeah, we'll see next week if Trump runs and makes his announcement. You know, that's going to be fascinating.
I guess I was thinking 2028, actually. Even Trump would wipe the floor with Fetterman.
Oh, of course. But who knows? I mean, again, we say that on a fair playing field, perhaps. But who knows what sort of deep state money and structures are in place that would make that not even close. I don't know. I'm saying that I believe that Fetterman is the perfect next meat puppet candidate for them. And you start to hear, I want to play that Katie Turr soundbite again, if I can, Philip, because you hear like the little bit of chuckles, but they're like, yeah, we see where you're going with this, Katie Turr. Listen.
As a nominee at some point for president, I know there's some variables, obviously, but I just, you know, what he did in the super red, deep red parts of Pennsylvania, and the way that he ran ahead of Biden, as you were saying, ran ahead of Trump. I mean, it makes you wonder about his future.
Was that Jen Psaki on the left of that panel?
Yeah. So that's Jen Psaki's first big week. So Jen Psaki's got her new job, and she's like, oh, there's some variables, but she's like, yeah, I see where you're going with this. I think we're going to hear more about this. And of course the mainstream media has fallen in line with him, right? They sit down, they're like, John Fetterman, who bravely overcame a stroke to win the Senate. You know, we sat down with him, and we just want to say, and you hear that on The View and Sonny Holston, and you know, you're so brave. You've overcome this. And so that's the fawning media coverage that you'll get. They'll do Time Magazine pieces. They'll do 60 Minute pieces with him, and they'll feature him and, you know, what he's been able to do. And then there'll be more focus when he's in the Senate on stroke cases and money for stroke victims and all of that. It's right out of their playbook. But I just think that they need a meat puppet, and that's exactly what they want with Fetterman. So when I heard that, that's immediately what I thought. They need another Biden that they can absolutely control. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Let us know in the chat what you guys think of this. We have a daily newsletter, which, as you know, you can get at redacted.inc totally for free. It's totally free. We try to put a lot of value in it for you first thing in the morning. We work hard on it, and I hope you enjoy it. But you notice there on the right side of your screen, if you go there, you'll see you've become a VIP member. If you click that, you can become a Redacted VIP member as well. And that means by the end of the year, our goal is to hit 3,500 Redacted Rebels, VIP Rebels, by the end of the year. And we're closing in on that number so that we... You know, that's how you're able to support independent journalism by becoming a VIP. That's what, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support what we do here, having the guests that we have on the show, having the staff that we have, and everything that we do to produce this show for you. Again, you don't have to, but if you do have some extra pocket change, you'd like to support the show, you can become a Redacted Rebel. That means we give you exclusive content as well and exclusive live streams. We're going to have a lot more of that coming out very soon because we're putting together a whole new series that we've been working on. It's taken quite a bit of time, but it's going to be rolling out here over the holidays, which we're really excited about. So you'll get to see that first before anybody else if you're a member of our VIP community. All right, let's take a look at some of your super chats on this Testosterone Thursday.
All right, before I jump into super stats, I was thinking, like, whenever you're talking about meat puppets or whatever, remember Men in Black when that they open up that dude's head and that little guy sitting in there controlling it?
They pull him off the skin.
That's what I always think. Like, that's what Biden and Fetterman pretty much are. There's probably some little alien dude in there that's controlling them.
Or like Weekend at Bernie's. That's how what I picture.
Yeah.
Like, they just wheel Biden out. They just wheel him out, push him out.
Give him some Adderall.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, like when Biden was doing better, he's doing better when he's not speaking, right? When he's not in front of an audience, he's doing better. Like his polls go up, his numbers go up, his approval rating goes up. And they just roll him out when they need him to.
He won a presidency by sitting in a basement. So,
yeah. Hey, and Fetterman did by staying in his parents' basement as well.
We got super chat from Candy Mitch. Canada Bill C-11, censorship, free speech online.
Yeah.
There must be a bill going after free speech.
Yeah, we've been covering that here on the show, the Trudeau bill, the censorship bill. It's going to really affect content creators.
So Uwe Uwe's got a question here. Speaking of cornucopias, does the Fruit of the Loom logo have a cornucopia or not? What do you remember? Now, this is the Mandela effect. There's a lot of people that remember the cornucopia from the Fruit of the Loom logo. Do you remember the fruit of the cornucopia?
I don't remember a cornucopia. I just remember grapes. I just remember grapes. That's all I remember from the Fruit of the Loom.
Grapes, yeah. I remember them falling out of a cornucopia, personally.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember a cornucopia.
I just remember grapes. Personally. Yeah, like grapes or cherries or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Brandon McGee, great show today, guys. Sending love from Antarctica. I identify as Antarctican. I also feel better, Nat. Also feel better, Nat and baby. So there was your Antarctica.
Thank you so much. So we do have, you don't have to drop me another super chat, but I want to hear from you. Like, so you live in Antarctica. You're there for like a certain amount of time on a research base. That's pretty crazy. That's awesome.
Render, let's work through the fear. Fear works against us and makes us more susceptible to the tricks of the power-hungry controllers. Stay positive and make sure the world moves in a positive direction.
I agree with you. You know, I don't like to be a fearful person. I'm usually a very, very positive person, and I'm always like a glass half full kind of person. I always try to be the optimist in every situation. That's kind of how I operate. And I think one of the things that Dr. Shiva was talking about, and he and I are going to go deeper into this. Actually, I'm going to be going through some of his separate research on systems and really diving into that because I'm fascinated by it. If you understand how the system operates and you understand that this is all part of one big organism, then you're much more empowered. Like if you just see these like mainstream media Drudge Report stories or CNN, you know, fearmonger stories that they put out, right? Now it's monkeypox. And now, you know, the new strain of COVID is coming for you and your kids. You know, they put out all of these different things. And it's designed, it's part of this one mechanism. And I think that's what Dr. Shiva teaches and what it was, you know, his research is showing. It's just all part of this. If you understand how the system operates, you can rise above it. And I think that's incredibly important to understand. So don't fall for any of this garbage, this sort of monkeypox is coming for you.
Hans Wolf. Hi, are we on at 1700 Eastern 2 days a week now? Thank you.
Yeah, so our normal time is 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's when we broadcast live, 4 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Thursday. And then we've got additional content that we publish as well on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday usually. But we are live 4 p.m. Eastern time. But with the daylight saving time last week, it was all screwed up because in Europe, we were 4 hours ahead and now we're back to 5 hours ahead. So it's... There was a week's difference there. 1 week you guys were behind. It was just, again, why I hate daylight saving.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
All right, last one here. Melissa Wood, hope Natalie and your daughter feel better soon. We had strep throat run through our house for 2 weeks. Really appreciate you and all your honest reporting.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. Very kind of you.
Mr. Johnny Five, I'll just go ahead and read this one. You guys are the best. I'll read that one too. So
there we go. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for a wonderful week. Much love to all of you for hanging out with us tonight, and we hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you back here a little bit later tonight with some additional content. So much love to all of you. Good night, everyone. Lights out.